Welcome to episode 32 of the Animal Addicts podcast. On today's episode, Casey talks about some ancient DNA while I debunk another myth. Today's episode is another bird-heavy episode, although birds aren't actually heavy. And at least one of them can fly this time. As you can guess, our animal of the week this week is of the avian variety. So without further ado, let's fly into episode 32 of the Animal Addicts podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 32 of the Animal Addicts podcast. As always, we're your hosts, Allie.
And Casey.
And today we're going to talk about a whole new with one exception, animals. But before we get to that, Casey, what have you been up to since last I saw you?
I actually got to watch a talk from the Nat.
Mm-hmm. San Diego Nat, right?
Yes, the San Diego Nat. And it was on returning nature to our urban cities.
Oh, that sounds actually interesting.
Yes, it was a talk by entomologists. Mm-hmm. And so he was talking about the utilization of indigenous plants to bring back in local insect species. Okay. And one thing he was working with was this species of bee over in Australia, because he's from Australia. Mm-hmm. And the blue-backed bee, I believe is what it was called, and wasn't seen in the area for a long time. And then they started implementing certain strategies with incorporating indigenous plants in the area to attract them back.
Interesting.
Yes. And so now I went on to online to look for Californian natives to try to bring some nature back, because all the insects in my yard are invasive.
Oh, good. So what were those plants then?
It's a lot of native sedges and grasses.
Okay.
There were also some perennials and other flowering plants, sometimes trees. And there was also significant impact, even if it was there just a short amount of time. And then, of course, if you use non-native plants, there typically were non-native insects, particularly amongst pollinators, that were coming in.
Yeah. Well, also a plus side of advantage of native plants is that you don't really have to water them as much, right? Because they're supposed to survive in this climate. So, not climate, but in our area. So.
Yeah, it's climate.
Okay. It's been a long time since geography.
Geography. That's not geography.
No, it is. Oh, well, you study climate and climate and whatever the other one is. See, now I've forgotten. Because it was not, I thought it was going to be where things are. It was not where things are. It was boring stuff. So, anyway, I took one. We literally had one day because I was in that class with a friend, and we got there before the professor did, and I was like, it's not too late. We can still ditch. Anyway. Rabbit trails. But we were watching a video, and there's this guy on the video that had to be from the 80s or, mm-hmm. 90s. They must have updated this from VHS, obviously. And he's standing next to this canyon speaking, and his name was James Sad, S-A-A-D. And we're just like, don't do it, James.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, geography is not, sorry to any geographers out there, but it's not terribly fascinating. but we did study that stuff. I've obviously forgotten all of it.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned that technically San Diego is more of a desert than anything else.
I would classify it as Mediterranean.
You say Mediterranean, but technically our area is desert.
Well, there's a lot more.
It's not just San Diego. It's a larger chunk than just San Diego alone.
I have to look at my climate maps that I know of.
But anyway.
Wait.
So yeah, but anyway, the point was
yes.
Native plants, you wouldn't have to water because they live in this climate.
Yeah. Well, you might want to water them a little bit since we have these consistent droughts.
Yeah, but still, you're not going to have to water them as much as you have to water non-native plants.
And I want to finally, I've seen literally a single native bee species. Well, actually two, but only one of them is in my collection.
Would you have to mow the native grass, though? That'd be really annoying.
That's the thing. You shouldn't, really. Unless you live in like, well, if you live in like a gated community, you probably wouldn't even be allowed to plant it. No. But I hate lawns. Gosh, I hate lawns.
I know you hate lawns.
Get rid of them. But yeah, like native grasses, just let it grow and the native plants flourish. You don't have to maintain it.
Yeah, but you also just can't walk in that area then.
Sure you can. You just have to walk around certain plants.
So you get bit.
Not necessarily.
This is a great way to get bit.
I don't care. It's how you experience all of nature. Like this.
Getting bit by a venomous snake. That's how you...
You will hear it.
No, because now they're adapting to not rattle.
Well, that's not typically around here. That's more Midwest.
Okay. It's happening here, too, because I've had plenty that don't rattle at me. So, the little scary things. You got to go hiking at daily so you can see a snake. Watch when we go, there will be no snake.
That's my luck. No, like, always my luck is, like, I make the joke, it's like, I can't bring my mom anywhere. She's a jinx.
Anyway, I feel like I see them so often on most hiking trails, but not all of them. Yeah. Anywho's. But, yeah, okay, well, that's cool. That's an interesting thing. Speaking of plants, my succulents are still alive. So, yay! I have one that I talked to the lady and...
Okay, I thought you were going to say you talked to the plant.
I did. Well, I mean, I kind of do because I'm like, how are you guys doing? but I have one that's still inside and I'm going to have to plant it somewhere else. I haven't figured out where yet outside because apparently it's going to get bigger and it can't. Because we have these... oh my gosh, what are they called? The cement block things, but they have the two cinder blocks. And then we have this back wall, and we get a lot of erosion and everything, so I don't like manual labor of fixing that back wall. It was a nightmare a few weeks ago. But anyway, so I was like, you know what, these little succulents that don't get too big, I could probably plant in the little, I already forgot the name of it, cinder block, in the hole. So I filled it with dirt, and I put the succulents in, and I'm like, you have a better chance in nature than you do with me. So we're going to try for the best, hope for the best here. So I planted them in there. So it's like kind of a cute little like planter, essentially. And I'm just, I still have a couple holes left to fill, but I want to see if these survive first. So before I kill more plants. So anyway, so I went out and checked on them, because also we had a lot of rain a little while back, and I was like, oh no, it's too much rain for them. So far they're alive, and the one inside is still alive. I have to figure out where I'm going to plant it, but anyway, so I haven't killed them yet. That's not wood, but anyway. Yay, succulents are surviving because I'm leaving them to nature and not to me. I'm the worst. Philodendron, I think that's the one I did that I could actually control and actually not kill.
Yeah.
I'd really like to have houseplants, but also with tiger lily. I have to see what houseplant is okay for a cat to eat because she's inevitably going to eat it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking. First off, I would have to find a place for the plants. And it's like, it does not match with my mom's at all because, like, she does have succulents, but then a bunch of very foreign plants.
Okay. Are they in the house or outside?
Outside.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm not keeping them inside. Inside, they will die with me.
I know. I want inside plants really bad. And we have some at work, but they're pretty big, and they don't get, like, any sunlight. So, obviously, there are plants that can survive. But I just want to have some plants because it looks so much nicer, you know?
Yeah.
Also, I didn't even think of mentioning this because it actually happened.
What I would love is... I have a pothos outside, so I could actually bring it inside and just, like, have it vining around my room.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
It'd be very messy, though, if any of the leaves die and then just crumble.
Yeah, it's whatever.
A lot of vacuuming. Anyway, I forgot to mention, actually, a while ago, Tiger Lily's adoption anniversary happened.
Nice.
And I realized that she doesn't get that many because we adopted her on the leap day. We adopted her on February 29th, 2020. So, oopsies. But anyway, so yeah, so she had her adoption anniversary a while back. And I tried to send a message to the adoption place, and my phone refused to send it. And I just gave up. I was like, all right, whatever. It's been a year. They assume she's okay. Anyway, so yeah, so happy anniversary, belated anniversary, Tiger Lily. Stop eating my stuff.
That reminds me when I was a kid, I had a friend back in like elementary school that would always say she was two because back she was born on 29th.
Yep, gotta love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but we should get into the things we wanted to talk about today, Casey.
Yes.
I know you had something.
Yes. So mine has to deal with dead life.
Casey back to being Casey. Anyway, here we go. Yes.
So recently, scientists have sequenced the oldest DNA sequence yet.
What?
It's the oldest DNA they have ever sequenced.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. It was a mammoth... I cannot talk today.
Stand together, man.
No. Mammoth remains were found in a permafrost deposit. And it was so well preserved that they were actually able to extract some DNA from it, and they were able to sequence it. And the mammoth is around 1.2 million years old.
Wow.
Yes. And previously, the oldest DNA that was ever sequenced was from a horse that was found 560 to 780,000 years old.
Wow.
Yes.
Where did they find that?
I think Russia.
Okay.
Probably.
One of those freezing cold places.
Yes. And reason why this is very significant is because DNA is very unstable after an organism dies.
Okay.
It doesn't like to stay together. Oh. So it'll just degrade. And it has this H, depending on the organism and the form of preservation, it will have a certain half-life where after a certain amount of time, it will degrade. And then at some point, it's completely
useless.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's kind of like comparable to the half-life of radiometric dating, except that's more complicated math.
Yeah, again, once again, this is something that anybody can relate to, Casey. Yep, continue.
I'm a nerd, I can't help it. anyway, like I said, it becomes very degraded, and so with these old DNA fragments, they tend to be very short. And when you do DNA sequences, you want long strands of DNA to put in what's called polymerase chain reaction.
Okay.
Which is a little machine. Mm-hmm. It has a enzyme called TAC, DNA polymerase 3.
Yep.
Yeah. That's from an extremophile bacteria that puts together the bacteria's DNA for cell replication. We use that nowadays because back in the old days when we used PCR, what you would do is have to put in an enzyme each time because you have to heat it up in order to unravel the DNA so mm-hmm. the enzyme can actually replicate it, then cool it down and heat it back up again, which would break apart the enzyme. So you have to add it each time.
New enzyme each time, okay.
And then with TAC polymerase, DNA polymerase 3, you can just let it run, go up and down with the temperature as much as you want.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, because it's so degraded, they established a certain threshold for the length. Anything that was below that, they just tossed out. Because it's very susceptible to, like, contamination. Mm. You have to wear, like, full body gear with, like, apron. Not apron, it's a like full suit. Double gloves.
Yeah.
Masks.
COVID times 10.
Yes. Because they've had problems with it before when they thought they extracted DNA from a weevil that was preserved in amylin about 100 million years old, I think. I can't remember exactly. And it turns out it was contaminated with a bunch of modern DNA from several sources.
Oh, great.
So they set that threshold so they were able to sequence it. And they were actually able to show that species they particularly sequenced was a Colombian mammoth, and by doing these DNA sequences, they were able to determine that it has a two-species origin instead of one lineage. So basically, it originated from the interbreeding of two separate species.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yep. That's some of the cool implications, and I find it very interesting.
So it's a mutt mammoth?
No, it's its own species, but if you go way back, its speciation started with this hybridization event.
Okay. A hybridization event.
Yes.
Be the two individuals that got busy, and you're like, we're a hybridization. Why did I put two extra syllables?
Well, we're a hybridization event. We're part Neanderthal.
Well, you know. There we go. All right. Well, that is exciting. Is that it for the... Yep,
that's it.
Confidently closed that page. Wow. So I decided we have not done a myth in a while, Casey. We need to get back to our myths.
Yes.
Things that people need to know are not true. Mm-hmm. Like the venomous baby rattlesnakes. It's not, well, they are venomous, but they're not worse than the adults. And the earwigs eating your brain. I think that was our first one.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is another one that I think, much like the rattlesnake, a lot of people believe.
Mm-hmm.
Like almost anyone believes this.
Yep.
I feel like. And it is the myth that if you find a little baby chick, a little baby bird that's like fallen from the nest, You're not supposed to touch it because its mom will abandon it. False. As we've actually discussed a while ago, I don't remember what bird we were talking about. Birds have a shit sense of smell. They are not going to sense that. So it is okay to pick them up and put them back in the nest. I think the, well, at least one hypothesis for where the myth came from was that if a bird sees the nest be disturbed by a human, then she's more likely to abandon the nest versus smell. She's not going to smell you on the baby bird. So if there's no mama around, put the baby back in. If mommy's around, then you kind of just have to leave it. Mm-hmm. And birds will just abandon their babies all the time. And as we know, there are a lot of birds with dicks, and other birds may push them out of the nest anyway. But you can safely pick up a baby bird and stick it back in the nest as long as mommy's not right there. So you don't have to worry that you're trying to help this little bird. It's going to get abandoned by its mommy. I mean, honestly, probably trying to raise it by hand wouldn't be the worst idea at that point because it could have just been kicked out by mom in the first place.
Yeah. Although, if you don't know what you're doing, you definitely shouldn't do that.
No, but, I mean, you can bring it to somebody who does. But if it is very clearly there's a nest right there, I would just stick it back in the nest.
Yeah.
Just look around for mom first. Because if she thinks that humans have been messing around with stuff too much, then she might peace out.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, yeah. But you can totally pick up a baby. Don't, like, just pick them up for fun. Don't do it for fun. But if you see one, you can put it back in the nest. It's okay. But yeah, so that's a really short myth. That's basically a very simple thing. Like, you think this is it, but no, you can. Again, bird sense of smell. Real shit. It's not like a dog. It's not going to smell you on them.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, but that, speaking of birds, this is why we said a flock.
Yes.
At the beginning of the episode today, guys. We are very avian focused again. And I feel bad because I have friends who are terrified of birds, and I realize we cover a lot of birds. There's also just a lot of birds.
Yes.
But we're very birdie focused again.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to choose our favorite.
Yes, you did.
And I wanted to, you know, keep it kind of our weird mishmash month of the Indian, Southern, and Ocean, and Antarctica.
Even though thus far there's no Antarctica.
No, the ones that we chose are not. Nope, they sure aren't. But what do you most associate with what do you think is the animal most associated with Antarctica?
Probably penguin.
A penguin. It's a penguin. So I decided our category was going to be our favorite penguin. Neither of us chose a penguin.
From Antarctica.
But either way, we still chose penguins. Which just tells you how awesome. You guys, in looking into this article, into this category, I literally told Casey to choose his first because I couldn't even, there are so many cool penguins. Anyway, so yeah, but Casey, you go first. Tell us what your favorite penguin is.
So my favorite penguin is the Galapagos penguin.
Yes. Tell us about them.
Yes, so their scientific name is Phoeniscus mandiculus.
I love that one. Phoeniscus mandiculus?
Yes.
I love it. That's definitely a spell. Phoeniscus mandiculus. That's how you're getting a manicure, though. That's like how you magically cast your nails to get a manicure.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway. Yeah, continue.
So, as their name suggests, they are endemic to the Galapagos.
Shocking. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But unlike some other species associated with the Galapagos, these guys don't really have any barriers between the islands, so there's no independent subspecies on the different islands. It's all one single species.
Okay.
And these are actually the furthest from Antarctica of all the penguins. And they're actually there's the only penguins that can be found in a northern hemisphere.
Wow, I didn't even think of that.
Yes, there's some just above the equator.
Okay. Because Ecuador, Galapagos.
Yes, it is Ecuador.
Yes, Ecuador is in charge of the Galapagos.
Yep.
In charge of them? It's fine. We'll go with that.
Okay. So these guys are 53 centimeters tall. And they weigh about 1.7, 2.6 kilograms.
Oh, they're cute.
Yes. And they are slightly sexually dimorphic. Males tend to be a little bit larger than the females, but it's not particularly pronounced. And they're actually the smallest among the Phoeniscus genus, which is also sometimes called the banded penguins.
Okay.
And these guys live up into their 20s.
Okay.
And just like all the other penguins, most of their diet is consists of fish.
Yep.
They especially fish like anchovies, sardines, and mullet that like the colder waters.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And their closest living relatives are the African Humboldt and the Magellanic penguins.
Also very cool looking penguins.
Yes.
Penguins, like I said, are awesome.
Mm-hmm. Also, none of which are in Antarctica.
Nope, none of them. None of the coolest ones are in it. I think it's just because we're so used to the emperor penguin, right? That's the Antarctic one. We're so used to that. There's like two down there, right? And
of the 18 established species, only 8 live in Antarctica permanently. Nope. And fun fact, there's possibly 21 species.
Yeah.
Because there's 2 subspecies of Adélie penguins that some studies now suggest might be 4 separate species.
Yep. Anyway, back to the ones we chose.
Yes. So these guys live in caves and crevices in volcanic rock along the coast.
So cool.
Mm-hmm. And they're kind of dicks because they will steal nesting material from nearby nests to build their own.
Are there baby little chicks in this nest when they're doing that, or they're just stealing from the nest?
They're just stealing from other nests.
That's at least better than a lot of things.
And like other penguins, Galapagos penguins are monogamous and will mate for life.
Okay.
And unfortunately, due to their preferred prey items, which prefer colder waters, and they live in the subtropical region of the world, they are particularly susceptible to effects of climate change.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
We actually talked about this in my ecology course last quarter. But back in 1982, there was a significant El Nino that caused 77% of the population to decline.
Wow.
Yeah, because the warm waters came in, so the sardines, anchovies that like those colder waters dove down deep where the penguins can't get them.
Yep.
And these guys are listed as endangered by the IUCN Red List. Mm-hmm. It's estimated there's about 1,200 mature individuals left.
Oh, that's not very many.
Yep.
Oh, on islands, I guess, mm-hmm. but still.
And it is currently in decline. Their major threats are fluctuation in food availability, as I mentioned before, human disturbance on the island, as well as predation by invasive species like rats, cats, and dogs.
Why are there rats, cats, and dogs on the Galapagos?
Because they came along when people went there.
But are there even, like, really established cities on the Galapagos?
I don't know.
I don't feel like a lot of people live on the Galapagos. I'm going to have to look into that now. Because that shouldn't be a thing. I mean, rats just jump on ships anyway, but...
Yeah, well, rats and cats go everywhere because they were both on ships and we went everywhere. But yeah, that's the Galapagos penguin.
All right. Well, I chose, has differing names. I'm going to say the name I like the most. And this is the fairy penguin, otherwise known as the little penguin, also called the blue penguin.
Which is the name I prefer.
Yeah, well, I like fairy penguin because it's adorable. Mm. But they're so cute. But blue penguin is another very typical name because they're blue in color. So anyway, I've already discussed this part. They're also known as the blue penguin. the scientific name is, oh no, we had trouble with this already. Eudipetula minor. Yep, that's what I'm going with. They live along the coast of southern Australia to as far north as South Solitary Island. Where's Solitary Island?
It's in the Oceania as well.
Okay, but like where? Like,
I believe it's around New Guinea.
Okay. Anyway, so they live in that little area. Average lifespan is about 6 years. Some have been recorded living into their 20s. Oh, they don't live that long. They're so cute. Okay. The world's smallest penguin species, like I said, that's why they're called the fairies.
Yeah.
They are only 30 centimeters tall, teeny tinies, and they weigh 1.1 to 1.2 kilograms. What are you trying to show me?
It's near Australia, the island.
Okay. All right.
near New South Wales.
Ah, okay. There we go. That makes more sense. Anyway, they are piscivores, not surprising. They feed on fish like anchovies and sardines, same as the Galapagos. And they will also feed on squid, octopuses, and crustaceans.
For a second, I thought you said fit.
Fit?
Fit on squid.
They will fit on squid. Oh, these penguins are crazy. Anyway, they get the name Blue Penguin from the fact that the feathers on top of their head and neck. I feel like I don't need to explain this. But okay. From the fact that the feathers on top of their head and neck and on their back are an indigo blue color. They're really pretty. You obviously, I'll post a picture. You'll see. They're really pretty. And blue's my favorite color, so.
It's a contender for me.
They're pretty great.
I was talking about the color.
Oh.
But yes, also the penguin.
Yeah, they're so cute. Okay. A contender. What? Blue is the best. I don't know what you're talking about.
I like violet.
Okay, that's good too. All right, anyway. They are monogamous species that form pairs, and they don't typically split unless there is an unsuccessful nesting or one of the mates dies. I feel like you would have to split at that point if one of you died. That would be a good reason. Anyway... I've lost where I was. There I was. Both parents are involved in nest building and taking care of offspring. This is why we love them. Males usually take more of the responsibility of building a burrow for the nest, and females take most of the job of incubating the egg. And in the breeding season, parents will only venture 8 to 9 kilometers from the nest site and will spend 12 to 18 hours hunting for fish. That's a lot of time hunting for fish. Oh my gosh.
If you've ever watched like March of the Penguins, the females... When the males are the initial ones incubating the eggs, they're gone for days.
Yeah. Anyway, that's because they want to get away.
Also, if you haven't watched Our Planet, there's one on, oh my gosh, I can't remember what it was. It was one of the ocean ones.
Okay.
No, Frozen Worlds, I think it was called. I can't remember the title of it. But there's one scene, I believe it's King Penguins, and they're heading back to their nests. And it's cool watching them porpoising.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they have to because there's leopard seals in the area.
Oh, no. It's all so sad. Anyway, so they spend a long time looking for the fishies. Mm-hmm. And in the non-breeding seasons, they tend to remain within 20 kilometers of the shoreline, but can venture, it was one word, can venture up to, 710 kilometers away from the shore. Look at those guys getting crazy up in there. They are listed as least concerned by the IUCN Red List. Population estimated at around 470,000 mature individuals. Population is currently stable. The threats to these little guys are introduced predators, including dogs, red foxes, cats, and rats. It's so weird to me to think of rats as predators, but I assume they're just eating eggs.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Rats are also harbingers of disease.
There's that, too. And then pollution, of course, is a threat to them and dwindling prey populations. So we really have to look at our fishing practices because...
They're awful.
It affects so
A lot of fisheries so have declined by like 90%.
Yeah, and it affects so many things. So we really need to knock it off of that. But anyway, so that is the fairy... Or blue penguin, or little penguin. I mean, their little is so basic. They're like, oh, look, they're the smallest of penguins. We'll call them the little penguin. Blue makes more sense, at least.
But plenty of animals have basic names.
That's true. Like Kathy the tiger. That's different. Mm. All right. Anyway, but we're moving on. And this animal, because we are in our
Ignore
Indian,
me.
Yeah, we're just going to wait for him to finish whatever the hell he's doing.
Sorry.
Because we are in our Indian and Southern Ocean and Antarctica month, we are finally going to focus on an animal that is from Antarctica. Well, not from Antarctica.
Some.
Is in that general area, sort at of. Least, unlike our animals that are not there at all. But they go down into the Southern Ocean, at least.
Yes, they do.
So at least it's kind of in there. And it's going to be another one that, this one flies, unlike penguins. And our animal of the week is...
The Wandering Albatross.
The Wandering Albatross. Tell us about him, Casey.
I will.
Will you know?
I'll try.
Okay.
So these guys are from the order Procellariformes.
I'm sorry, try that again.
Procellariformes.
Okay, that's better.
And their family is Diomedidae.
Mm-hmm.
And their scientific name is Diomedea exulens.
Okay, sure.
That is right.
I'm not arguing. It's just, you know, the names are crazy.
Yes. So these guys are found throughout most of the Southern Hemisphere.
Okay.
So much of half the globe, basically.
Yes.
So these guys are estimated to live to be about 60 years old.
Wow, okay. Yep.
And these guys are about 1.1 to 1.3 meters long. They weigh about 8 kilograms.
Wow.
And they have the largest wingspan of any extant bird.
Really?
Yes. It's 2.5 to 3.5 meters across.
Holy snap!
Yes.
That's like 9 feet.
It's actually 12 feet. Approximately.
Oh, okay.
Yep. One wing is a me.
Ooh, what does that compare to, like, condors? What are condors, like, 6
Condors, feet? About 10 to 11 feet.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right. Continue.
Yes.
This is crazy. Mm-hmm. As we're both sitting here, like, meh.
Not even close. Like, I no. stand. And it's...
Yeah. I think my arm would be, like, 5 feet. I don't know.
Yeah. I would love to be next to one. See, with its wings sprawled out.
I know. Excuse me. I just want to compare.
Anywho's.
Yeah.
These guys are primarily piscivores. Yes. They will eat a variety of fish, as well as squid, cephalopods, and crustaceans.
Mm-hmm.
But they will also occasionally feed on carcasses that are floating in the ocean.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yes. And, of course, when that happens, there's going to be a ton of birds there. But, of course, the albatross gets pickings because
they're big.
They're huge.
Yeah.
And they are a monogamous bird species. And they will form pair bonds for the duration of their life. However, extra pair copulation occurs frequently.
Oh, snap.
Yes. And they will typically mate only once every 2 years.
Okay.
And when it is breeding season, first off, they may form pair bonds, but they don't stick together forever. They go on their separate lays, like how some married couples should.
Probably, yep. Mm-hmm.
But they will nest on the sub-Antarctic islands and make their nests out of mud and grass, basically.
Okay.
Very simple. And they will only lay one egg at a time, and that is probably just a constraint of them being huge.
Okay.
When you get big, you don't lay as many eggs, typically. Okay. And typically, if they're unsuccessful in one nesting 1 year, they will try... Won't try again until the following year.
Okay, so they take a break.
Yes. And both parents partake in incubating the egg, and they will work in shifts in which one goes out foraging for fish, and the other one stays around to watch the egg.
Nice.
The chicks are dependent upon their parents for about 9 to 10 months.
Okay.
And when they are hunting fish, they will typically hunt them by what's called surface seizing.
Okay.
Which basically they're gliding along the surface and then pluck something up.
Yes. I've seen eagles do that a lot too.
Yes, except they have talons to do it.
That's true.
They have to do it with their beak.
Ah, yeah, okay.
But they will also occasionally dive down, but they're not particularly deep divers because they're better at flying, so right. They can usually only go about a meter deep.
Okay.
And their enormous wingspans means they can go hours with just soaring, riding on the thermals without flapping their wings.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yes. And because they spend so much time out on the open ocean, they actually have a gland around their nostril that secretes a saline solution to help regulate their salt levels.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Yes. A lot of animals that live in the ocean actually have stuff like that or converge on similar body plans. These guys are currently listed as vulnerable by the IUCN Red List. And it's estimated there are around 20,000 mature individuals left. The population is currently in decline. There are major threats include being caught as bycatch by fisheries.
Okay.
As well as introduced predators on nesting islands, which includes cats, pigs, goats, and rats.
It's just amazing to me that pigs are going after the nests and stuff. They just don't.
I don't want to mess with pigs, honestly.
No, pigs are really tough, but I just don't see them like going after eggs.
They will eat whatever anything. They find.
Anything.
They're known cannibals, so they really don't have much discretion.
I
taste delicious.
Oh, my God. I just thought of an albatross because I couldn't eat. I literally just had to look it up because I couldn't remember what it was. But back in, like, middle school, I think, we read, it was not our high school, I don't remember, but there's the phrase, an albatross around my neck. Have you heard that before?
No.
It's basically like a giant burden, because obviously if you had a giant bird around your neck, it would be weighing you down.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, just so you know, for anyone who cares about literature, of course you probably already knew this, but anyway, just a little fun fact. That comes from Samuel Taylor Coleridge's poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, in which a sailor who shoots a friendly albatross is forced to then wear its carcass around his neck as punishment. Anyway, I just like sort of like vaguely remembered that saying, but yeah, so an albatross around your neck is it's a burden because they'd be very big. Yep. Anyway, yeah, so there's some literary albatross or literary birds. There you go.
Another thing they will actually do, though, is they have been known to follow fishing boats.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And they will go down and steal
their
catch.
That's probably why they get caught in my catch, because they get tangled in it when they do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so that's the wandering albatross, who at least ventures into the area that we are talking about this month.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no segue for this.
Okay.
but you know what? The albatross do fly, at least.
Yes, they do.
And what do... I'm not going to lie, I completely stole this from Homeward Bound 2.
Oh, good lord.
Homeward Bound 2 gave me a pun. What did the dog say as trash talk to Lepidoptera?
What the...
Yeah.
Say as trash talk?
Yeah, he's trash talking it.
I don't know.
That's right, you butterfly away. I was so entertained by it. Because Chance like sniffs like an intruder and it's a butterfly. Anyway, good times. But that brings us to the challenge, Casey.
Yes.
And if I can see what's on the table, we're back to our cups. Are we going to
finish dreaded it? Cups.
I think we gave ourselves 5 minutes last time, right?
I believe that's correct.
Okay, great. We're doing that again. Okay, what did we do last time? Like 13?
I think.
We need to get above 13. All right.
But 13 is my lucky number.
Whatever. Who's going first? Me or you?
You.
Okay. Ready? Go. Your favorite toothed whale?
Orca.
Yeah. Also your favorite animal, I guess. The fuck was that?
My terrible impersonation. Delete that.
Okay.
It's from Australia.
Cassowary? Not a cassowary.
It's a bird.
Kookaburra?
Yep.
Okay. It was terrifying. Another type of murder bird, but not quite as pretty as a cassowary, not as big as an ostrich.
Emu.
Yes.
Oh, so deadliest animal in Africa is?
With a mosquito. A mosquito?
An actual...
a hippo.
But smaller.
Hippo. Pick me a bow.
Yes.
Yay, okay. This is, I don't know how to describe it. They have them at the park and at the zoo, and they're gray, and they have stripes, and there's, I think there's a lesser version, too.
Kudu.
Yes.
Greater kudu.
Yes, great.
Oh, it's a canine. I don't know if I can say that. Africa, very successful hunter.
African wild dog.
Yes.
Okay. This is a type of fish that we use to sell. And think of a orange and black cat.
Clownfish?
No. Cat. A cat.
Tiger?
Yes.
Tiger barb.
Yes, there we go.
Okay, not high, but...
Low.
Opposite of land. I said it.
Did you skip, put it back if you said something wrong?
No, I said something that's in there.
That's what I'm saying, so put it aside.
Okay.
Go on to another one.
Oh, mess. Oh, fastest cat.
Cheetah.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, no. They're in the furthest section of the exhibits at the park. And what is a giant eland? What type of animal is that?
Antelope.
Yes, so it's smaller and think, I don't know.
Bontebuck?
No.
Garanook? Thompson's gazelle?
It sounds a lot like your, I guess I can say this, like you're roaming, but you're not.
Roan antelope.
Yes. I think that counts, right? I didn't say it.
It's a deer that, I think, that's very known for jumping on rocks.
A deer? Oh, no. Oh, it's that little one. The little one? Oh, God,
it's
what are they
small.
Called?
Yeah. Liz with the dwarf mongoose is at the zoo.
Oh, my God, what are they called? I need some sort of hint on that name, man. Just pass it.
Oh, they're around here. They'll mimic rattlesnakes.
Oh, go for snakes. Yeah. Wow, we did terrible. Yeah.
Yes.
Look at me being so confident putting all those. All right, so we got, didn't get those two.
Three. I got five.
Five. Put the two that we didn't get back. Although now I know what one of them is. Oh, goodness.
Well, you only know part of its name.
Back to 10. No, I'm pretty sure I know it's now a low-end gorilla is my guess.
Not gorilla.
Oh, okay. There you go, then. All right, well, we're back to our 10. So next time we do this, you know, I really thought we were going to finish that. There's still a lot to go, man. Yeah, okay. Well, we're back to 10, so we need to get 14 next time. But that does bring us to the end. Were those cheers?
Yes.
Okay. That brings us to the end of episode 32 of the Animal Addicts podcast. As always, we're your hosts, Allie.
And Casey.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Stay safe.